Bored with Friends, episode 37, Fireball Island, The Curse of Volcar.
I mean, I'm not allowed to tell that story because Zach wants to stay on topic.
Stay on topic.
All right, well, we got a little off topic.
Again, 40%. I'm lazy and I'm a mooch. What I do.
This is not that kind of podcast.
Welcome to Bored with Friends, the podcast about hobby gaming and learning how to piss off island demigods. I'm Zach Dyer, and on this episode, I am joined once again by Sean Bissonnette.
I feel like this is a regular thing now, Zach.
What? Pissing off island demigods?
Yeah, definitely the pissing off of the island demigods. But I feel like just you and I just here having a conversation, doing our thing.
It does. I mean, you weren't here last month, but yeah. I guess you could call it a regular thing.
I mean, you know what? As soon as you mentioned that I was not here for the Doctor Who episode, I'm thinking to myself, oh yeah, that's true, because we record so many other things that I didn't even realize that I wasn't on the last thing that is this thing.
That's very true. Very, very true. Oh man, it's been a while since we recorded. As of this recording, I'm behind releasing stuff. It's been a hectic month. A lot of gaming in, but still very hectic. Just between work and convention. No, well, we didn't. Did we go to convention? No, not this month. But mainly work.
Technically, that was this month. TotalCon and PAX East and the other one you went to, Conclave. That's all at the beginning of this month.
Well, those were in February, actually. Conclave. Yeah, I went to TotalCon and Conclave. I didn't really talk about them on the last episode because I was talking with my mom and Vanessa because they were on it and you weren't. But yeah, we've been very busy the last few months. This episode is going to be a little different because we're not going to review a game that is out. Sean and I, got to go to the Providence Gaming Guild and they were hosting the tour of Fireball Island, The Curse of Volcar, which is the new spin-off reprint restoration of the original 1980s game Fireball Island from, correctly named, Restoration Games. So we're going to use that as our review section, just so we don't confuse everybody here. But first, recent plays, the other stuff that we get to play, things that we liked, things that we didn't like. Sean, you know, since you're back, since you were missing for a month, I'm sure you played a lot of games, right?
I did. For once, it was not just Jackbox Party Pack.
I know you tried to get me to play that.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, someday it's going to happen. I'm going to bring my Switch over to your house, and I'll be like, oh, man, Zach, check this out. And it's going to be in the middle of, like, a Quiplash game or something, even though that's not possible because you have to connect to the internet and, like, sign in and stuff. I'm going to find a way to get you to play. But I did play a bunch of stuff, but I'm going to only highlight a few of them for the episode.
All right. What was the first thing you played?
Sure. So the first thing that I played that I had never played before was Outburst. I don't know if you're familiar with Outburst at all.
I actually am. We owned a copy of that when I was little, and I don't remember it completely. I just remember the pawns were exclamation points, and I think there was a trivia aspect to it. So I wasn't very good at it.
So I never played a version from when we would have been younger. I've only played this newer kind of like party, like quick version. So essentially think of it as being the Family Feud, more or less. Mm-hmm. So you have a stack of cards that are, you know, probably about index card size, and they're kind of like Magic Eye kind of thing. So there's a topic written at the top, so it'll be, you know, like names of U.S. states or like famous Chris's or monuments in Washington D.C. like little trivia categories, and then you have a minute to guess as many as you can, and you get 1 point for each one that you get right.
That's right.
Yeah, so you know, you can play it with two people. I mean, I played it with just Keith, who does Critical Failure with us. I played it with just him and I one-on-one. I played it with, teams. So it would be, you know, me and Amanda versus him and his wife, Alicia. I've done the four of us individually. I've done three of us, one-on-one. So is however you want to split it up, but essentially it's a trivia game. So when it's your turn, a card is drawn, and then, you know, the topic is given to you. So it's like, you know, like sea mammals, and then I can decide if I want to play that or if I want to pass it. If I want to pass it, then the person to my left has to do that one. So there's a little bit of strategy involved where it's something like Girl Scout cookies, where I know, you know, I could probably guess 4 or 5 of them, but I know that Keith can only guess Thin Mints. So I pass it, so that way I know he's not going to be able to do as well as I could. Mm. It is the first of 60 points wins. So it's something, you know, whether you're focusing in playing it and, you know, arguing and kind of, you know, getting into it like you would with the Family Feud, or you're just, it's, you know, background while you're just killing some time watching a movie or something like that. It's a lot of fun, and it's nice and simple, and it's just trivia.
That actually sounds like a trivia game I would like.
Yeah, it's nice and quick. The round's really fast. First to 60 points wins, but really it's just, it's the same idea like when you're playing a lot of other party games. So like Apples to Apples or Cards Against Humanity, even though there is a designated, like, win counter, you really just play until you just feel like stopping.
I'm gonna have to go raid the game closet at my mom's house and see if she still has her copy, because I remember it having a board. And
it's entirely possible that it did. It's just, you know, let me look this up right now. But I know that the one that Keith and Alicia have was like one of those like little like small box like quick things like you'd pick up like, you know, Target or Toys R Us or whatever.
I think I saw it at Target, and I remember saying, like, oh, Outburst. I remember that game.
Yeah. It does look like there is an old version with a board of some kind. It looks like it's, like, a wooden, like, pegboard, and you move your little pegs along the track, and you roll die and stuff.
I don't think hers was wooden. I don't know. I might be mixing up a couple of games from my childhood.
There appears to be... Oh, there's also Outburst, where it's a... Yep, little exclamation points to move along the track.
Yeah, all right, that was the one we had.
But it looks like it's still the same kind of thing, where it's like magic eye looking cards that you slide into a, you know, viewfinder.
And yeah, there was like a really loud in your face 90s viewfinder you could stick the cards in. It's starting to come back to me. I'm sure I will get tweeted at or texted from my mother and my sister or whatever. Saying, how do you forget all this stuff? You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, but it's the kind of thing where, like, if you told me the games that I had, if you told me the games that I had when I was a kid, like, I could tell you that I played, like, Life, Risk, and Candyland. And those are the things I could tell you that I played. I know that I played probably dozens of different games, but those are the ones that I played mostly. So those are the ones that I remember.
We should go back. I remember way 3 years ago, Walt and I did a childhood games episode. Like, it was our second or third episode of this show before we even knew what the heck we were... I actually, you know, I shouldn't finish that sentence because we still don't know what the heck we're doing. I think that would be a fun one to revisit.
Yeah, I do. I'd love to go back and whether we talk about memories with them or we actually play them and see if they're still fun. Like, I'd love to just play Life and then just talk about it.
Yeah. So, yeah, Outburst. I vaguely remember this. I'll have to play it again.
Yeah, but good stuff.
Speaking of games from childhood, this game that I recently played is not from my childhood. However, it is a very old children's game. I tracked down a copy of this on eBay. And it is the McDonald's game from the 1970s. The reason I tracked it down was because one of my favorite podcasts, I've mentioned it before, Flip the Table, who are no longer putting out episodes, but they still, like, it's fun to go back and listen to their stuff. One of the first episodes I listened to them that they did was the McDonald's game, and it turned out to be a really good game, it sounded. And so I was able to track down a copy on eBay. I got it for, like, $4 or $5, so really not that expensive at all, totally worth it. And I, you know, it got shipped to me. It was super beat up. It was missing one piece, but I was able to replace it. And I tried it. Played it with the family. Played it with a few other people. What it is it is a roll and move game. Everybody picks one of the McDonald's characters. Like, if you remember, you know, the old McDonald's characters. You had Ronald McDonald. You had the Hamburglar. I think Mayor McCheese is one of the characters. And, of course, the Grimace. You can't not have him. Basically you roll your dice and you move along this board, and the different spaces that you land on will get you food cards, because you have different food cards that represent pieces of the McDonald's menu. So hamburgers, cheeseburgers, chocolate shakes, the hot apple pie, cookies, you know, the things that they used to have. Some of them don't exist anymore. I think the Filet-O-Fish was in there too. Mm-hmm. And of course, fries. And throughout the board, there are these let's go to McDonald's spaces. And when you land on one of those, that's when the game comes to life, quite honestly. Because the person who landed on it draws a customer card. And on it is a menu with all the items that could possibly be, you know, available for them to order. And next to it, it'll say, like, you know, one hamburger, two cheeseburgers, two fries, and two cookies or something like that. And then the person who drew this has to read it as if they are a customer. They have to address everybody else at the table who are employees of McDonald's and say, may I have, and read through whatever it is on the card. Sometimes at the bottom of the card, it'll also trip you up. It'll tell you, instead of a hamburger, I would like a Filet-O-Fish or something like that. So it's a memory game. You're reading it off to and nobody is allowed to touch the food that they have until they say please at the end of the card.
Oh.
So you got to remember what they said, remember what it is if they changed anything up, and then you got to frantically grab all the food items. And then the way that you determine who gets to hand in the food first is everybody's got a marble, and they have to throw it into the McDonald's sign that's in the center of the board. And it's got a little chute, and the marble goes down. And whoever's marble is at the bottom, they get to present their food order first and see if they got it right. And if they get it right, they get points based on how many food items they turned in. It's really simple, but it's really fun because you can, you know, change, you can read the at varying speeds. You could, you know, read it really fast and try to trip people up. You could see that, you know, somebody is about to win. So you could deliberately mess up the orders so that they don't get points. Because one of the things that happens is if you have an excess of food, if you have more than three types of a food item, you hold on to that food. And then at the start of your turn, you get to turn it in for extra points. So there's a little bit of gaming the system here that can happen, and it's really cool.
Nice.
My kids were having a blast. Like, we were taking pictures of when my youngest Evelyn, when she got one right, she was able to, you know, she remembered everything. She grabbed all the food items and she got her marble in the chute first. Vanessa was helping her a little bit, but for the most part, it was all her. And when I said she was right, I mean, she stood on the table. She was cheering. She jumped up and down. She was so excited. And it was awesome. And then, you know, everybody was just having a blast trying to remember this stuff. And I was able to bust out the game with some friends of the family as well and see how they would do with adults. And it plays well with adults, too, because it's dead simple to teach. But the memory aspect of trying to remember the food and, you know, placing the orders, you have a blast with that. You get so excited when you land on a let's go to McDonald's space.
I mean, and who doesn't get excited when you land on a let's go to McDonald's space in real life?
It also makes you want to go to McDonald's, yeah.
Brought to you by McDonald's.
So if you can get a copy of this, and they float around eBay, like, that's where I got it. I would highly recommend picking up a copy.
All right, then. That's awesome. I mean, I remember seeing the pictures when you put them up on Twitter. I was like, what the heck is Zach? Is Zach really playing a McDonald's game right now?
Yes, I am.
You were playing a 1970s McDonald's propaganda board game. And it looked damn fun.
It needs to come back. Like, it's a really good game. Like, I think, you know, the company that we're going to talk about later, Restoration Games, they should pick this one up.
Yeah, but it's you don't see... and it's the same thing with, you know, video games in the 80s and 90s. Like, you don't see, like, brands making games about themselves anymore. Like, you know, the McDonald's game. Or there was, like, the 7-Up game and the Cheetos game on, like, Super Nintendo and, like, stuff like that. Like, big companies don't make, at least not in the same way, I feel like. Like, they don't market themselves as the toy like they did in the 70s, 80s, and even in the 90s. So it's a nice little nostalgia trip for the stuff like that.
That's yeah, I can see that. Like, I remember a friend of mine had the 7-Up game on Nintendo, and I desperately wanted to play it. I don't know why, but I really wanted to play it. And I went over his house because I didn't have a Nintendo, but he did. And when I saw he had it, I was like, I want to play that game. And he puts it in. I'm like, wow, this game sucks. Like, okay. It was awful.
You're just running around the beach and you, like, snap your fingers and, like, little, like, fizzy bubbles come out, and that's what you use as your weapon. Ooh, the Cheetos game was even worse.
But this one was very good. And from my understanding of copyright on board games, you can copyright themes, you can copyright stories and artwork and stuff like that, but I don't believe you can copy mechanics. So as far as I know, it is possible for this game to come back without the McDonald's on it.
Well, yeah, they could just say it's like
just a generic fast food chain game, but part of the magic obviously is that it's McDonald's. So
yeah, it's part of the shtick. It's part of the whole entire experience.
Oh well, I have my copy. I'm happy.
You have yours, and no one else ever will.
Let's see how long it lasts, because it's pretty beat up.
Well, I can only imagine. It's, 40 years old.
Yeah. So what else have you been playing?
Well, the other game that I've been playing, Zach, is Racco. I don't know if you're familiar with this one.
That's another one I've heard of and I've probably played, but I don't know. Tell me about it, Sean.
Yeah, it's another, fairly... I'm just looking it up now so I can, see it again, a little refresh myself. It's another, fairly simple, pick it up at the bookstore, toy store, whatever kind of game. But what it is everybody has, this little red plastic track, and there are cutouts for either 10 or 12, I can't remember, playing card-sized slots. And going around in a circle, everybody draws cards, and in order, you need to place these cards down, I believe, from the space furthest away coming towards you, or it could be the other way around. Doesn't really matter necessarily. But the idea of the game is every round, after everybody has their 10 or 12 cards all in their little row, everybody takes turns. So you can either take the top card, or you can take the top card from the draw pile or the top card from the discard pile, and then you need to replace that card with one of the cards in your rack. The idea is that numerically it'll be, starting at the bottom, lowest, all the way to highest. So the first person to be able to replace all their cards to essentially be in some kind of numerical ascending order wins. There are other rules that involve, if you're not the one who gets Racco first. There are tracks for points. So, 5 points. So it basically for however many in a row you have before that line breaks, that would determine who gets, second, third, fourth, so on. But we didn't bother playing with those rules. It was just if you won, you won. If you didn't, if you're not first, you're last. So this was another one that's, quick, easy to set up, easy to understand, easy to play. Only takes, 10 or 15 minutes at the most to do each round. But it's something, fun to do with folks when you don't have a whole heck of a lot of time and you want to just play something good and play it fast.
I am looking at pictures of this, and I don't believe I've ever played it.
Yeah, so it's another one that Keith and Alicia, they like to buy games that you can play with as little as two players. They're the couple that plays Scrabble just one on one, or basically every game that they play it one on one. It doesn't matter. Even if it's something you shouldn't play one on one, they'll just play it one on one. So if they can find a game that is ideal to only be played with 2 to 4 people, then they're all over it.
I hope they listen to this show.
I don't. I'm sure that Keith would. He's starting to get into podcasts now. His wife barely. She doesn't consume really any media except for music, and she likes. Oh my God! She likes that Impractical Jokers show. She hates all television except for Impractical Jokers and the Food Network. whenever I go over there, it's either, the TBS movie is on. They're not watching. It's either a movie on TV that's definitely a DVD that they already have, or it's Impractical Jokers, or it's the Food Network, or, some kind of sporting event. Those are the things that are on their TV. it's very, it's funny. But I know that Keith's starting to listen to podcasts now that we do one with him. I don't know if Alicia listens to any podcasts.
I only say it because anytime Vanessa's on, we usually talk about games that she and I have played together as a couple. So they work as a two-player game. Usually that's what we talk about. Yeah. And they might get some ideas that way. Or I could just tell Keith, I mean, since he's on Critical Failure, some suggestions, if he cares. I mean, this looks like an interesting little game. It's abstract, but I've played similar games just with a deck of cards. But this adds an element to it. Like, I actually like the idea of the actual rack. That way it's easier to keep track of everything. So,
yeah. If you're looking at the picture, I'm looking at the Amazon picture right now. So it's, if you're not the person who gets Racco first, so, 5, 10, 15, 20, like, as you have these cards in order, that's how many points you accumulate. So if you have Racco, you have 50 points, you win. But you can have these other, that's how you would determine who gets second through fourth if you care for those things. But, it was just something, going all the way back to high school, like once a week, Keith and I have what we call mandate. But now that, there are significant others and they have their first kid, like it's just, we'll like get pizza and beer and like play like little games like this. Like that's, kind of what, going out to dinner and going to the bar has turned into now that we're in our 30s. But it's always fun.
Stupid adult things.
Yeah, seriously. It's like, oh, man, what do you mean we can't go to karaoke because there's a baby?
A baby can sing.
A baby can sing. She's got some pipes on her, I'll tell you what.
Yeah. Awesome. Well,
yeah, man.
I'm glad you got two games in a row that weren't Jackbox Party Pack.
I did play Jackbox. I mean, I have the list of games that I played in April. For the first time or the first time in a long time. And let me tell you what, Jackbox is number two on that list.
Oh, man. So the only other thing for me that I was going to talk about was, and I mentioned this once back in the PAX Unplugged episode, we played Fortress from Stronghold Games. And this is one of the fast-forward games, and I hadn't played it since then, but I was able to bust it out a few weeks ago on my birthday with my brother-in-law and his husband. We had just finished playing Pytown, which also I got at PAX Unplugged, but we did a full review of that, so you can go back and listen to that if you want. But Fortress I hadn't talked about much on the show until except for that episode, and it's an interesting game, and I hadn't touched it, so I had to remember how to play. But the neat thing about Fortress is it teaches you how to play as you play it. So literally you open the box and it's a deck of cards. That's all it is. But there's no rule book. So the first card, you pick it up, you read what it says, and then it tells you what to do next. And then you do what it says on that card. And then as you pull more cards, as you're drawing, it'll say stop. Now read this card. And it says, okay, this card does this. And then you put it out on the table and do what it says. And it just keeps building and building and adding to the game. The idea behind Fortress from the Fast Forward series is that you're adding these fortresses to the table. You're getting cards in your hand that have numerical values to them. And when you have enough power, or you think you do, you can attack the fortress and take it into your possession. But then you take those cards that you attacked it with. So say I had two twos and I put it under there. You don't know that I have two twos, but you could take your cards that you have in your hand and you could attack the fortress and try to get it from me. And if you can beat my two twos, then you get the fortress. And whoever gets the fortress at the end of the round wins. The round ends when these hourglasses come out. Once three hourglasses come out, it ends. But the neat thing is there's still a ton of cards in this deck. So you're like, oh, this is boring. It's pretty simple. What else is there? And then you start the next round by peeling off the next five cards from the deck and you, shuffle them into and make a new deck. And you take all the cards that you previously used minus the ones that were under the fortress and put them out. And now all of a sudden there's two fortresses and there's more cards with different numbers on them. And now there's special cards as rounds go by that, break the rules of the game and keep adding layer after layer after layer to this game. And I'm like, this is fantastic. Like, it's just, it's like it's got its own built-in tutorial that at first you're just like, well, all right, this is pretty simple. And then it just keeps adding more and more. I really enjoyed this game. I forgot how much I liked it at PAX Unplugged. there's a reason Devin and I played, like, you know, 20 rounds in a row of this game.
That's awesome. I'm trying to find, you can probably hear my mouse clicking on the recording. I'm trying to find Stronghold Games. I'm trying to go through and, like, find, like, pictures of, I'm finding a lot of pictures of the box. I'm trying to find pictures of, like, the cards, and that's proving fairly difficult, but that sounds awesome.
Well, you're not going to find a lot of pictures of the cards because there's a spoiler element to it. You know, as you go deeper and deeper into the deck, it adds more to the game, like I said. You know, there's more fortresses. You can destroy fortresses. You got all these specialty cards that let you look at opponents' cards and do all this other crazy stuff. Obviously, those things don't want you to spoil those things, so you're probably not going to see a lot of pictures of the cards. There were other games in the Fast Forward series. I don't remember all of them. I definitely talked about them in the PAX Unplugged episode, but 5 months later, 6 months later, whatever it is, I can do math, picking up this game again, I'm like, actually, this is really good. There's a reason why I bought it, and I was infatuated when I first tried it. I still recommend it. It's really fun. Of the Fast Forward games that I tried, I liked this one the best.
Oh, okay. I mean, I would be totally up for trying this.
This is definitely a branch of the pub kind of game, or the bar, or, you know, whatever country you're from and you want to call it. my family does a lot of pub trivia, so I think of it that way.
Gotcha. Yeah, but remember when you, Joe, and I used to bring games to the bar after work?
Oh, yeah, that was super fun.
That you say that like it wasn't actually fun.
I was lifting up my hot toddy to take a sip, so it sounded sarcastic. I didn't mean it.
Of course. But yeah, that was always a lot of fun. We were definitely very cool for doing that, but we enjoyed it, so
yeah, whatever. The bartenders thought we were super cool. Yeah, that was sarcastic.
Like, see, that it was sarcastic. It's like, what are you guys doing? It's like, we're playing games. Oh, okay.
Why? we have sports ball on the TV.
Like, duh. As we watch the game of sports, we will... Oh, hello, dog. As we watch the game of sports, we will imbibe in the alcohols whilst playing Exploding Kittens or something.
I don't think we ever played in Exploding Kittens before.
No, we didn't.
Thankfully. I tried that game. I didn't like it.
I played it once with Ryan and Mike when we had our apartment in Providence, and it was all right. Like, I enjoyed it enough, but, like, it's not something I'm, like, you know, dying to go back to.
Yeah, it was a one-and-done kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
The only other thing I want to bring up is... I mentioned it earlier. My birthday was this month. Happy birthday to me. That's not what I wanted to bring up. My mother gave me a fantastic gift. It was not a board game. I actually did not receive that many board games for my birthday. Right. I did receive this really cool board game related item. She hand crocheted me component bowls, if you would believe it. Literally crocheted bowls that I can take pieces, game pieces, and put them in when we're playing. And they all fit inside each other. She came in with this box that was like, I don't know, it looked like a like paisley, like it's something my, you know, great meme would have in her house or something. And she's like, let me explain before you get upset. So I open it up, and it looked like a bunch of yarmulkes inside it. So I take them out, and I'm like, all right.
Congratulations. Everybody's Jewish now.
It just happened. I don't know how. But I open it up. I take them out. I'm like, okay. And she goes, they're bowls because you said it when you played Terraforming Mars, you were really annoyed about how the pieces just went everywhere. I'm like, oh, all right. And immediately it flashed in my head. I'm like, this is brilliant. This is great. I can't wait to use these in games. And I already started using them for a couple different games. it was just... cool because like I played Santorini with my mom that day, and you know, I put all the giant plastic pieces from Santorini into the biggest bowls that she had made, and they fit perfectly. So we just had them all organized on the table, and it was great. I'm like, that was really cool. I think she got the idea from somebody on Etsy. So if you're feeling creative and you know how to crochet, that's something that you should definitely try to do. And if you don't know how to crochet, well, my mom won't do it, but there's definitely somebody on Etsy who sells these things. So check it out.
is, by the way, your mom is opening a side Etsy business. Welcome to the and all the nerdy fun .com/store where you can buy the crocheted game bowls that Zach's mom's going to make and sell for us.
Yeah, we should come up with a logo for an all the nerdy fun so she could crochet it onto the bowls.
Ooh, that'd be good. But, but yeah, that's awesome, man.
Sounds like a plan. We need crocheted bowls with logos on them. So get on that, Sean. That's your job.
It's going to be in all the nerdy fun. I'm sure all the nerdy fun is already a website. So in all the nerdy fun cast.com/store.
I've recently, I did a spree of uploading some of the podcast episodes to YouTube. Funny anecdote. Yeah. And this YouTube channel, it's existed for, I think, over a decade now. No, well over a decade now. And it used to have all our, it still does have our old animation projects that Walt, Chad, and I used to do. Yeah. And there's this joke because we never finished our big animation project. It was called Primetime 3. And I posted all these podcast episodes on there. And we've since rebranded the channel with an All That Dirty Fun and everything, although it still lacks a logo. And the last three or four podcasts that I put on there, this guy keeps trolling us and posting, "Where's Primetime 3? On the YouTube comments. So
it's still like waiting for Primetime 3?
I'm like, I've more than announced that that's not happening, and I did it over a decade ago. You need to stop.
Unfinished Primetime 3 footage, part 4, and that was 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Almost a decade ago, then. All right.
Holy moly. There's what appears to be some kind of, so video blogs. Both Walt, Chad, one from 8 years ago and one from 9 years ago.
Yeah.
And sitting in what only can be described as a meme chair.
Hey, that chair was awesome. That was the first chair we had in our apartment that wasn't a lawn chair, okay?
Fair enough. Was it one of your meme chairs?
No, it actually belonged to my sister. She gave it to us when I moved into that apartment.
Okay, well, fair enough. But it's just like, holy crap. Like, I'm just looking at the one from 8 years ago. Like, I can it looks more like him because he has the beard. But I see 9 years ago, he has what appears to be a soul patch with a little chin fuzz. I know it's Walt because I know Walt. But, like, if I look at pictures of me from 9 years ago, like, I can tell that that's me. I look at this guy, and that does not look like Walt, except for, like I guess the shape of his head. Oh, my God. And when I click on it and – this picture of Devin that pops, like in the first thing is, I guess, Devin introing the video. Devin looks like someone's mom from a 1980s home movie. I'm taking a photo right now, and I'm gonna put this on Twitter, and I'm gonna ask if it's Devin or someone's mom, like named like Denise from 1983. Got the big round glasses, got the poofy hair. This is not 9 years ago. This is 30 years ago. Holy smokes.
I didn't mean for this to happen. I just thought it was a funny story.
I also need to upload, because I uploaded the first half of our prequel arc of Critical Failure 3 months ago to the YouTube channel and have yet to post the other, nine episodes, 10 episodes as of tomorrow, crossing my fingers.
Yeah, remember that meeting we had back in October saying that we were going to be on time and upload things? And yeah. That lasted 2 months.
We'll get there. We'll get there. It's a work in progress, man. Consistency.
It's part of the on-topic thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we're getting the podcast done almost on time. Like almost. YouTube, even though the YouTube is literally just, another 3 minutes of rendering, it takes time.
Yeah. I usually do it at work. All right, so.
Thank you, yeah.
Recently, you and I got to go to the Providence Gaming Guild. They are part of, a community in Providence, Rhode Island, where we're from. Well, I'm not from Providence, but anyway, whatever. We got to go see their little, play space. Basically, I had never heard of them until I looked up Restoration Games and saw that they were coming to Rhode Island with the Fireball Island prototype. Fireball Island Curse of Volcar is currently on Kickstarter. As of this recording, I think it will. It'll probably be on its last day when this episode drops, quite honestly. If you are a listener of this show and you haven't backed it or even heard of this, shame on you, because it's been out for a month and it's blowing up like crazy on Kickstarter. I think they got almost $2 million, if not already, as of this recording. But basically, I was super stoked that they were coming to Rhode Island, because otherwise I would have had to have joined you at PAX East because they were there. But they came from PAX East all the way to see us, which I was shocked. But whatever. I reached out to, you know, I definitely wanted to go. And Providence Gaming Guild, they found out about our show, I guess because I had tweeted at Restoration Games about coming to Rhode Island. And they followed us, which was really cool. So we got there and, you know, got to actually try the game. So what Sean and I are going to do now is, you know, discuss that experience, basically. It's a prototype, obviously. Some of the rules are going to change. They're still in development on some things. And the components were not, you know, 100%, maybe like 85, 90% done. The board was definitely done. And Volkar worked great.
He said that the board was still like a test board. It was very glossy.
It was hand painted and everything, but it was vacuum formed, so it was raised up just like you would expect it to be.
Yeah. It was a good looking board. Everything except for the player cards, because you know they were largely irrelevant. Everything looked good. It's just he was very adamant about the fact that it would look much better.
Yeah. And just from the pictures on the Kickstarter and the renders of it, it's going to look amazing. For anyone who doesn't remember the original game, back in the 80s, there was this game called Fireball Island. And a lot of people remember this with, you know, rose-tinted glasses. It was a roll-and-move game where you were moving your pawns along an island on these spaces, and you were trying to collect a treasure and get off the island. Before Volkar, who was this demon lord that was the carved into a mountain, basically, he spit fireballs at you in the form of marbles, and the marbles would move along the tracks and knock over your players and knock them off bridges and stuff like that. Dead simple game, but a really fun toy mechanic to it.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to 2018, Restoration Games got the license, and they are doing this sequel game. It's not a reprint of that original game. It's definitely different. There's no roll and move now. It's all card-based. So, you know, if you remember correctly, Sean, we had two cards to start with, or three? I don't remember.
I believe it was two.
Yeah. And you just choose which card you want to play, and it would give you a movement amount on it, and then an action that you could perform. So you had some choices to make, which was really cool. I assume you thought it was cool, too.
Yeah. I thought you were still describing it, so I was just kind of waiting for you to continue.
I'm sorry.
I thought it was cool. yes, it was very cool.
This episode's so off the cuff.
Well, whatever. I mean, it's the kind of, you know, let's peel back the onion, or you know, open up the kimono, or whatever terminology you're supposed to be using. We didn't do a proper review game, but we did want to do a bonus episode about playing this. So it just made sense to just make them, not necessarily a bonus episode. We wanted to do an episode talking about this. Not that they necessarily need promotion with the game, but because this is a significant thing that we, you know, that we did play, even if it's not a proper review. So, you know, it's a little bit different than the normal thing.
Yeah. I mean, the Restoration Games, their idea is to take classic games and find the heart of what made them classic and then give them new life with new mechanics. And right off the bat, that card mechanic replacing roll and move, to me, like, hit the spot. Like, that was a really cool, simple thing to do with a modern twist to it, to replace rolling dice and getting a random movement. You had two choices, and you had an action that you could perform on each of those cards. So you can decide what, you know, you can make some choice in the game, which I really liked. Each of the characters that you played also had a special ability. I don't remember in the original if that happened. I don't think it did. But, like, my character, I think he got three cards. Maybe that's why I was confused with a hand count.
Yeah, I think that you had extra cards. I forgot what my guy did. I was the person who was presumably left over from the original game. I think that's what he said. Like, I was the person who got left on the island in the original version of the game.
Oh, yes. Great, that's the fifth player expansion.
Indiana Jones-looking guy. I honestly don't remember what my player ability was. And I guess that's not a good, but we don't really have a way of looking it up.
No, we don't.
we only played the one round, and it was still all, you know, beta test, play test. Like, even our abilities that we had don't necessarily mean that that's what it'll end up being.
That's true.
So you know, he said, like, take all of this with a grain of salt. Like, this is not necessarily what it's going to be. This is what it is right now.
I was hoping for more interesting actions to take, but at the same time, they're trying to keep the game simple. Like, a lot of the actions on the cards were like, you can move Volcar. You know, you can turn him to the one rotate click to the right, or one rotate click to the left, or something. They also had the trees on the board. These were cool because when marbles start come shooting out at you, the trees could be moved so that they had little tabs that stuck out so they could block paths and redirect the marbles to different directions.
Yep.
And then they had the snakes on the board. You remember those?
Yeah. So if a at some points you would have to, like, flick marbles or snakes at people, or when the when the lava or marbles or whatever were coming out of Volcar and going down the mountain, they would sometimes knock the snakes over. But essentially, if you got hit by a snake, that would reduce your goodness. I know it knocked you prone. Somebody could steal one of your treasures, I believe, or was it something? And I don't know, it reduced your movement, but I don't remember exactly what it. I don't know if you remember exactly what it does.
I think he changed it because in the video I watched of somebody playing it at PAX, it was it reduced your movement. But when we played it, I believe he had said if you start your turn with a snake attached to you, biting you, you had to give one of your treasures to the person who had flicked the snake. I think that was what it was.
Okay, yeah, that's what it was. I couldn't remember if it was both or one of those, but they both sounded right to me.
Or maybe it was reduced movement. I don't know. Now it's a couple days since we played it, obviously. I'm starting to get a little fuzzy. But the snakes were fun because they were tiny marbles, and they start out, like, placed around the board. So you have these spots that you can really, you got to be very dexterous and try to flick the snakes. And if anything goes off the board, I think you lose a treasure too. So you have to be careful with that. That was a rule that he said off the cuff too.
Yeah.
But one of the first things that we did was I got to shoot a snake, and I flicked the first one. I got to flick two snakes, and I flicked the first one, it, like, bounced off a tree and went nowhere. And then I flicked the second one, and somehow it miraculously landed into the molded spot for the first one and stayed there. Like, I couldn't do that again if I tried.
It's like, it is right there.
And then they also had the boulder. Do you remember what that did?
Yeah, so the boulder, if it knocks you over, the boulder knocked you over. I think you had to give your treasure away.
Yeah, a lot of it had to do with giving treasure away. But the boulders, they didn't come out of Volcar. They came out of the caves, because there were spots on the board where if you went to, it was a cave, and then you got to come out at another spot that was a cave.
So when you got to a cave, you would roll a d6, and then you would come out of the cave at that corresponding number. So I want to say when you let the boulder kind of come out, if it knocked you over, obviously it would knock you over, and it would drag you along. But I'm pretty sure you also had to give up some of your treasure to whoever knocked to the person who had, unleashed the boulder in the first place. But it was only if you fell down. Because remember, the boulder hit me and pushed me along, but my guy didn't fall down. So I didn't have to do whatever the negative repercussion was.
You were so strong, you caught it.
Seriously. Well, I mean, my dude had been on the island for, presumably 25 years. He was whichever Jonas brother was in the Jumanji sequel.
Spoilers.
Game. Whatever, bro.
saw that. I loved that movie. Well,
that's why I brought it up. I think Nick Jonas. I think it was Nick Jonas in Jumanji. But he's just there, and it was like, oh my god, you've been here for 30 years. It's like, nah, bro. It's been like 5 days. It's like, nah, man. It's been 30 years. spoilers. Nick Jonas is Robin Williams, basically, but not.
No. Anyway, back to Firefly Island.
He lived at his house.
He did. That was a really cool scene. So the objective of this game, we should probably say what that is. The objective of the game is to, you got to collect treasures, obviously, but also you have to, there's three sections of the island. There's, you know, the main section with Volcar on it, and then there's two subsections, and they all interconnect together so the marbles can go down all these paths and stuff like that. And you have to get to each section and get a souvenir picture. Because apparently the company that bought the island has turned it into a theme park and sent you there, and you're supposed to be getting these souvenir photos taken. But they won't let you leave until you try to do this. Because they're jerks and trying to get you killed, apparently. So you have to go to these...
I do not remember that part of the game. I did not remember the Jurassic Park-style theme park thing.
I don't think he explained that part of the story. I read that off the Kickstarter, and it was just, it added a story element to the game itself, other than where adventurers trying to get treasure. That's why in the, you know, when you get knocked down, you get to pull from, I think it was called the souvenir deck, which gave you those extra special abilities to make up for the fact that you lost things.
Hold them souvenirs. Okay. Yes. It all makes sense.
Like, I had the tote bag that said Fireball Island on it, so that when I got knocked down, I could put some treasure in the tote bag and I didn't have to give it to the player who knocked me down.
Yes, 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 yes.
So there's a lot of fun stuff like that. But the pictures, like, that's what I tried to do right off the bat. I was like, all right, I'm going to go to the picture taking spot. I'm going to get my first photo done, and I'm going to, you know, jet across the island and do the photos and get the heck out of Dodge. Didn't work that way. Mm-mm. But that was my plan.
I'm pretty sure at the end of the game, was I the only one who didn't get off the island, or was that you and I?
Both of us did not get off the island.
Okay. That's what I thought. So the other three people did get off the island, but, like, the boulder smacked both of us so far away that, like, it just wasn't going to happen.
No, I went the whole game. I got hit once, but I had the tote bag. And then it was at the very end of the game that all of a sudden, I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he decided to flick one of the fireball marbles that are also on the island, like the snakes, and he flicked it right at me. I'm like, why are you going after me? Like, what are you doing? Like, I don't have enough points. You're not going to get me or whatever. Like, you know, nobody's been able to hit me yet. Like, I was on a ladder right in front of Volcar, and none of the marbles hit me. It was amazing. So I was one turn away from getting on the helicopter pad and getting out of there. And he knocked me down, and I went flying down to the bottom of the island. I had no more movement cards that were going to get me off the island. I had no chance. And then, yes, after that, somebody decided to roll a boulder on top of both of us and knocked us even further back.
I was like, what the hell? Like we are not going to win. And it like what would happened was, and this is like, you know, whatever. We went to, at least from our perspective, to the right, which looked like the safer route.
Yeah, because there's no snakes on that side.
Yeah, and we didn't really get, you know, messed with a whole bunch, but when it came to like getting points and then getting out, we were at a severe disadvantage to everybody else who went on the more dangerous side of the board. Mm. So, you know, I went on the safer looking side because everyone else who had gone ahead of me had already gone towards that other side. So, you know, I feel like that's why I went that way, but there's definitely something to, unless you know what you're doing or you're like the only one going over there, or if you have a plan, maybe if we had a plan, it would have been better.
See, but I chose that side because it was the closest to me and I didn't feel like reaching onto the other side of the board because it's raised up so high.
Oh, there you go. That makes sense. I mean, I was sitting like right in front of it, so I was kind of good. But yeah, we went what appeared to be the easier route for our different reasons. But we ended up with, you know, we ended up being the only ones to not get off the island.
In retrospect, though, it actually might be smart. I'm just thinking ahead for when I get this game, because I did back it. It might be smart to go the same route as everybody else if there's a big pack of people over there, because they're going to be more cautious of flicking marbles at you and, you know, pissing off Volcar and sending all the marbles down the chute after you, because it might hit them too, right?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, people might be less willing to kind of mess with you if you they're gonna be messing with themselves.
Yeah. I'll have to try that next time I play this game.
Yeah, man.
But really good point. To speaking of Volcar, like that's the main draw. That's from the original game. Is you dump marbles into the top of the mountain and it comes out Volcar's mouth and comes shooting down the pathways at you. That's still there. You play. I think they were called Cataclysm cards. These, when you play them, you put a special marble in the scar, which is a track at the bottom of the island. And when the scar is full, that triggers the end game. That's when Volcar is completely mad and he wants everybody off his, you know, off his lawn because he's a cranky old man. And you're going to pick up the marbles out of the scar and you dump all of them into Volcar. And, I mean, you can do it any way you want. Like JR was saying, like, you could put in one at a time or you could just dump them all in at once. I think I launched it the last time, but thinking back, I completely screwed up putting those marbles in because I wasn't paying attention to the hole in the top of the mountain, and I ended up dropping them like on the front, and it was bouncing off his face and going onto the board that way. I didn't actually put them in the hole, so I'm sorry, and that's one of the reasons why at the end of the game one of the marbles was on the floor. I ruin a lot of things for someone who loves board games so much. We found it, though. We didn't lose it. This one prototype they have, and we found the marbles. So.
Dude, it was like emergency situation, and it was like kind of like, oh, crap, like these are the only marbles that I have. We need those marbles. It was good stuff. I very much enjoyed the game. It was – I'm trying to think. The rules were fairly straightforward in how you win and how you gain points and stuff like that. Like it was all pretty straightforward, which I appreciate. We did pause a lot to like double check and make sure we were doing stuff the right way. But just like when you interviewed, I can't remember the woman's name, but the Fire in the Library developer.
Oh, Carla. Yeah.
And it was like, you know, like, you know, when you're playtesting your you know, you're answering the questions that people are asking you, but not really, because you want to make sure that people can figure out how to play your game without you holding their hand. So like we were like, oh, JR, is this what it is? And he'd be like, I don't know, probably. And like he'd go back to like eating his pizza or like doing his thing. And it's like, oh, man, yeah, it's because we're supposed to figure it out ourselves, huh? or like, oh, does that seem like it's fun? So it's like we're playtesting. He's getting our input, even if we aren't directly, even if it doesn't look like that's directly what we're doing, that's what we're doing.
To his credit, though, he was also very tired.
Oh, yeah. Well, he had been at PAX all 4 days. Yeah, I don't mean to be like, oh, he was eating pizza and we were playing the game. He came from, I think, Austin or somewhere in Texas. He went to PAX all 4 days. And then he was just coming here to this, you know, to this gaming guild that we were at before going to the next place he was going to go to,
which was in Philadelphia.
Yes. So like, he was just going all over, the Northeast. So all in like a week period. So I didn't mean in like a disrespectful way, but like literally, he was getting his playtest information and was very, very tired, man.
That's no, I remember Carla saying in the interview, like, that's one of the hardest things to do because people hate you for it. But I think at that point, to JR's credit, he was just tired, so he could play that part pretty well and not care. But he was very friendly, and he did answer questions for us, obviously. Like, if we were getting an actual rule that is set in stone wrong or whatever, or we just had a clarification of something, you know, that was fine. Go ahead.
No, I was like, whether or not, like, when we got the fourth cataclysm, or fifth, whichever it was, and that was starting the end game, you and I were like, yep, all right, cool, end game started, two more turns. And then, like, everybody else was like, no, that's not it. I was like, well, no. It was like, yes, all the marbles are there. That means the end game is triggered. That means we run away. It's like, no, it's not. Where's JR? It's like, we don't need JR. Like, that's what it is. He told us that's how the end game started. And it was just like, guys, this is how it goes. Like, this is the one rule that I remembered. How to win the game.
But it was the one rule that everybody wanted you to remember wrong because we wanted to keep playing.
Yeah, no, that's true. But, I mean, there were a lot of other people that wanted to play, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what were you going to say, though? I'm sorry.
I don't remember now. It was just a fun game. I mean, it looks really cool, just that toy aspect of, you know, just like the original had. But they amped it up to 11. I mean, it was just, the island is huge, and it's got all this detail on it, and they had, like, the ladders and the bridges, just like the old game that you could stand on, and Volcar looks menacing now. Like, if you look at the original Volcar versus this one, it's like, ooh, baby Volcar. Ooh, that's Volcar's daddy. Like, this is, you know, all grown up, ready to kill somebody, Volcar.
Fireball Island. Let's find Volcar. Hold on.
I love when you look up stuff in the middle of recording. It just it creates wonderful times for me to edit.
Well, I'm sorry. I know that it's the mechanical keyboard and it's loud, and I apologize.
I was just referring to the dead air as you're just like Google searching things.
I mean, I said I'm saying stuff, man. Oh yeah, I got it. Although it's also, when I type in Fireball Island Volcar, what I will say is credit to the Kickstarter. Half of the pictures that show up are the playtest that we did.
Really?
Not our session, but like definitely like the newer board, like the very glossy like test board that we played on. Like I can see that in quite a few of the Google searches that I'm doing here. But yeah, this picture of Volcar that I found, he looks like some kind of like Yeti with horns.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Excuse me. So yeah, and then all the individual player pieces look the same, except for their different colors and the marbles. Yeah, so this is definitely the older version I'm looking at right now. Okay, cool. Yeah, he's like, ooh. He's like a Wookiee Yeti guy with horns, double horns. But anywho, back to you, Zach.
Well, I've said pretty much everything I want to say about the game. I really like it. I think people who are nostalgic of this game, you know, if they had it in the 80s, or if they had a, you know, family member who had it, because I think it was pretty expensive for the time, if they have any nostalgic feelings for this, they're going to really enjoy this. Because this is kind of like when, you know, you have a childhood book or movie and they remake it, you know, when you're an adult and you still have those fond memories, but you don't remember how bad it actually was. Like, it was really not that great, but you loved it as a kid. And then when they bring it back and they get it right and they, you know, it grows with you. This is what that felt like, if you know what I mean.
No, I got you. I mean, 100%, I get what you're saying. I mean, I wish that I had... I wish that I had played the original game. Like I'm looking at this thing, and everybody there, except for actually even like the younger kid who was playing, whose mom was playing with us, and he, you know, he had played it at PAX, over the weekend, so he was kind of like helping to guide some of the information. I feel like literally everybody in that building except for me had played the game, and everybody had the same excitement that, you know, you did.
You were in a room full of full-fledged board game nerds, so.
Yeah. And you know, if we were all sitting there playing, you know, old video games, I would have been all up in that business. And I love board games, but it's just, I'm the oldest of my direct family, like first cousins and obviously siblings and stuff like that. So, like, The gaming experiences, whether virtual or not virtual, all started with me. So the game coming out the year before I was born, I wasn't going to have played it. So it was cool to be in a room in a building that everybody was so excited for the remake of this game, and I was like, yeah, this seems pretty cool. so yeah, it was a good time though. I enjoyed it very much.
Oh. Well, I don't remember how many days are left on the Kickstarter, but like I said, if you got time, when this episode drops, there might be a day left. Go back it. If you don't have time, if it's over, I'm sorry. But it'll be available in a few months when it, you know, after it gets manufactured and shipped out, and you'll want to check it out then. And they got a crap ton of expansions. Like, go check out the Kickstarter. The extra stuff, like not just that extra fifth player like Sean was talking about. There's a like a pirate ship that was, you know, crashed into the island that you can put next to it. I don't even know how that is going to work, but it looks really cool. There's a bunch of, like, there's this thing with bees that I don't want because I hate bees. But you can dump a bunch of really small marbles through Volcar, and he just, like, shoots bee marbles at you. And there's all sorts of, like, you know, these extra little expansions that add more to the game and make it more interesting. As of right now, I'm still backing at the normal level and just getting the base game. Mm-hmm. Really toying with the idea of getting all the expansions.
Well, I'm on the Kickstarter right now. I mean, as of recording, there's a week left. So I'm assuming that this goes up on time. You know, there'll still another. I don't mean that in a negative way. There'll be another 4 or 5 days left to go back it.
Oh, yeah.
I had the Kickstarter open on my phone, and I didn't even look at it. 7 days. You got time, folks.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through all the backer stuff now.
There's some really cool stuff for this game coming.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, look at these guys. Look at these guys developing it. This is JR. They're all having a beer playing the game.
Oh, yeah, that's because they went to go see the Secret Cabal after they went to Rhode Island. So.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
All right. So that is our first impressions of a prototype of a Kickstarter that's not out yet. Fireball Island, Curse of Volcar from Restoration Games. I liked it.
I liked it as well.
All right. Any final thoughts, Sean? Anything else you want to talk about? Plug?
No, I mean, you know, we do the little intro outros all the time anyways. But yeah, go listen to Critical Failure. Listen to the other Board with Friends that we do. Listen to all the stuff. Follow us on the tweeters. Do all the things. It's always a good time.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this show, why not check out some of the other projects on the And All the Nerdy Fun Network, including Critical Failure, a show where a bunch of people with absolutely no experience with RPGs decide to sit down and try Dungeons & Dragons. Or Board with Friends. It's a book club-style show where we just discuss things other than board games, like comic books, movies, TV shows, and just all sorts of pretty much anything, really. Also, check out our YouTube channel, In All the Nerdy Fun, where we're going to have video reviews of different board games, all the podcasts are available on there to listen to, and who knows what other projects might show up. If you really enjoyed this show, reach out to us on Twitter and let us know, @BoardWithFriend. Like us on Facebook, or give us an iTunes review, always helpful. Or head on over to our website, boardwithfriends.blogspot.com. Either way, thanks for listening.